from KUER News in Salt Lake City. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Let's say Mitt Romney wins Orrin Hatch's Senate seat in the fall. He's got a good chance, of course, but he'll be 71. Why would Romney want to be a freshman lawmaker at this stage in his life, having been a governor, having been a presidential nominee? As the reporter McKay Coppins has asked recently, why would he consider abandoning his pleasant and perfectly Instagrammable retirement to run for office now? Well, that's one of the questions we'll take up today. Maybe it's just craven ambition, maybe he's bored, but Romney does seem to have an agenda in mind. Observers say he's alarmed by the Donald Trump-type populism in the Republican Party, and he may see Utah's distinctive brand of conservatism as another option for the party. So today in the program, we're talking about what kind of candidate and senator Mitt Romney would be after the news.
We want to take a moment to shout out the Good Line for supporting this podcast. If you're building a brand, these guys can help you with websites, film, design. They're all about finding and telling stories that bring together a full brand experience. Check out the new Radio West Films website to find out what that means, or you can see what else they do at thegoodline.com.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. For weeks, people had been expecting Mitt Romney's announcement that he was running for Orrin Hatch's Senate seat in the fall. A few news events got in the way, so he put it off. But on Friday, Romney made it official. He released a video announcing his intention to run and probably signaling a theme in his campaign and also possibly his idea about reforming the Republican Party. Romney said in the video that Utah has a lot to teach politicians in Washington. And pretty much every point he made, it could be argued, runs counter to the prevailing direction of the party and the agenda of the Trump administration. Romney mentioned the importance of balancing budgets and keeping away from debt. He mentioned the importance of free trade, of a more compassionate approach to immigration, and he said Utahns know how to treat one another with respect. Mitt Romney says he wants to take what he called Utah's values and Utah's lessons to Washington. So today in the program, we're talking about Mitt Romney as a Utah political candidate. Just what kind of a campaign will he run? What role would he play if he wins? Romney, of course, has been critical of President Trump in the past. Will he continue to be? And why at age 70 does he want to run anyway? Matt Canham is joining us this morning. He's the senior managing editor of the Salt Lake Tribune. As a reporter at the paper, he reported extensively on Mitt Romney's political career and ambitions. He's joining us here in the studio. And Matt, welcome back. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
And McKay Coppins is back with us, a staff writer at The Atlantic. He, too, has done a lot of writing and reporting about Mitt Romney. And he has a recent online article about his Senate bid. We'll give you details about that a little bit later on the program. He's joining us today from a studio at the offices of The Atlantic in Washington, D.C. And McKay, welcome back to you.
Thanks for having me.
And let me mention, I guess begin by saying, in talking about what kind of a senator Mitt Romney would be, what kind of an agenda he would pursue, there's a fairly large presumption attached to that, and that is that he would win. Now, most observers will say that he probably will, but it would be unfair to the Democratic challenger to suggest that that's a foregone conclusion. We'll talk about that a little bit later on the program, but I wanted to get that out of the way. So let's begin. Matt Canham, you start. Any sense of when Mitt Romney started seriously thinking about this particular new venture?
You know, that's not 100% clear. Mitt Romney, after the loss when he ran for president in 2012, clearly still wanted to be in the game. He held what he called his E2 summit regularly here in Deer Valley, where politicians and business executives would come and intermingle. He has wanted to be involved in politics, and I think because of that, he is asked about every opening in every position and every possibility, whether that is governor or senator, whether that is secretary of state, which he considered after President Donald Trump won the election. So I think at some point he's asked, when is the turning point? When does he start being asked, and when does he actually consider it? I'm not sure, but we do know that Orrin Hatch, Senator Orrin Hatch, asked him to consider it, drafted a memo explaining why he should consider it. And in that conversation, Orrin Hatch said that Mitt Romney demurred even then. But that might have been where it's possible that that was the moment where it became not just a possibility but something to seriously consider.
McKay, do you think that's the Hatch Hatch's urging was influential in those early days?
Yeah, there's no question. You know, the first story I wrote about Romney exploring a Senate bid was in April of last year.
Yeah.
And at that time, he hadn't had that particular conversation with Senator Hatch, but Orrin Hatch had just opened the door publicly by giving an interview here in D.C. saying that, you know, he would consider retiring if someone really great like Mitt Romney were willing to run in his place.
And people freaked. And then people freaked out.
Right, exactly. Right? Yeah. That kind of started the whole process. And I am told that by then, Romney was already kind of indulging it in private conversations. He wasn't actively exploring it yet. But, you know, he at that point, he was kind of interested in the idea. And when Orrin Hatch kind of opened the door and started the conversation and started the speculation, that's when I think Romney started to more seriously consider it.
And then Hatch backed off a little bit. There was talk of, overhyped intrigue is
Well, this is interesting because, you know, I started writing about this and the Hatch office almost immediately tried to walk it back a little bit and say, you know, Hatch was just saying that it would be interesting if Romney ran, but of course he's planning to run for re-election. And even more interestingly, more recently, at the end of last year, once it became clear that Romney really was seriously considering this and even that plans were in place for him to do it, the Trump White House kind of kicked into gear to try to prevent that from happening by actively lobbying Hatch, both in public and private, for him to run again because they didn't want to see Mitt Romney in the Senate.
Are you guys surprised that he didn't become a Mormon general authority or a Mormon mission president, or that he wouldn't sort of go off into that other part of his life, Matt?
You know, obviously he's a very spiritual person, and I can see that as a possibility. But as I said, after that loss, after that presidential loss, he had a few months where he kind of disappeared like most presidential candidates do after they lose.
Apparently took it pretty hard.
Took it hard. And then there was no moment where he didn't want to be part of the political conversation. I mean, I've seen no evidence from that point in the last 6 years that he just wanted to sit on the political sidelines. So I think that's why you didn't see that move. I mean, if he was like, look, that was it. I took my shot. I lost and I'm going to move on. If he was silent, like, say, a George W. Bush has been since his presidency ended, then maybe you go in a different part of his life. But he has always been interested in the game, always been interested in politics, and he wants a seat.
So he sounds like – I can't tell if politically speaking 70 is old, too old. You know what I mean? Because 70 is – that seems fairly young in some terms, but politically speaking – McKay Coppins, I guess he's got plenty of ambition still.
Well, it's interesting. So there's a lot of speculation about whether he is going to use this Senate seat as a platform for another presidential bid, or if you want, you know, this grand reentry into the political arena comprises, you know, a second act or third act, whatever act we're on in the Romney political saga. I'm actually not sure that that's the case. I think that what we're actually seeing here is Matt is absolutely right. Romney was always going to stay involved in politics and had kind of fell into this elder statesman role of the Republican Party. You know, that Netflix documentary came out, I think, a year or so after Romney lost. Mm-hmm. And it sort of rehabilitated his image in some circles. And even a lot of kind of liberals or Democrats or people who didn't love his presidential campaign saw this other side of him and thought, well, yeah, no, maybe he's a nice guy. He maintained this kind of voice in the political sphere. But I think that he was willing to stay in the game in other ways, right? I don't know that it was inevitable that he was going to run for office again. I think that Donald Trump's rise certainly aided that. But the fact that he's 70, to me, says that he's not looking to settle into a good long career in the Senate. He's not going to run for four terms or whatever. I think that he has something to say and he has a vision that he wants to put out. And this is a completely compelling and almost unprecedented moment in at least modern American politics. And he feels like he's not ready to just completely withdraw from it. He wants to be in the game. And this Senate seat is a way to do that.
Matt, you've talked about this interview that Romney gave where he talked about the moral failure of the presidency. And this, I think, was trickle-down discrimination.
Right.
Talk a little bit about that, because this goes to McKay's point that he has an intent, he has something to say, and apparently it part of it may involve shaping the Republican Party or reforming it in some way.
Yes. So this interview you're talking about was with Wolf Blitzer in Deer Valley, Utah, in June of 2016, before the election, and when it was pretty clear that Mitt Romney was. Excuse me, Donald Trump was the nominee, and Mitt Romney was talking about it. And he worried that Donald Trump would lead, you know, in his rhetoric, would lead to trickle-down racism, trickle-down misogyny. The idea that the president's tweets and public comments are sometimes brash and that it has an effect on people who hear it. You know, Mitt Romney, since he's announced he's running, has said that there are issues that he agrees with the president on. And I think that when if he is elected and he is the clear favorite, there are going to be plenty of things that he agrees on. But the way the president interacts with people, the way he demeans his political enemies or is crude or says things that are racially insensitive, those are the moments where Mitt Romney has repeatedly spoken up and I would assume would continue to do so.
Let's take a few phone calls because they get to this question. And McKay Coppins, I want to hear you on this Donald Trump part because I think it's pretty fascinating. Let's go to the phone first, though. Lisa is with us in Salt Lake. Lisa, hi.
Good morning.
Morning.
So I wanted to bring up the point about the whole endorsement thing that's all been going on about Twitter. You asked at the beginning of the show, is Romney going to consider to be anti-Trump? And if you then look at the tweets that went back and forth between the president and Senator Romney about Trump said, I endorse Mitt Romney. I hope he wins. And Mitt Romney said, thank you. I appreciate the endorsement. And I hope to get the endorsement of the people of Utah. And what's going on the liberal sites on the internet is this tweet from Romney from March 3rd, 2016, during the primary process, which says, if Trump had said 4 years ago the things he says today about KKK, Muslims, Mexicans, disabled, I would not have accepted his endorsement. And then he went on to accept his endorsement recently.
Right,
so
right.
That would be interesting to talk about.
Yeah, let's do talk about it. Let me read, and Lisa, thanks. I mean, this is clearly this is an odd place for Mitt Romney to be, as well as Donald Trump, for that matter. So here's what Donald Trump, the president, tweeted. I think it was it earlier today or was this yesterday?
This is yesterday.
Yesterday, yeah. At Mitt Romney has announced he's running for the Senate from the wonderful state of Utah. He will make a great senator and a worthy successor to at Orrin Hatch and has my full support and endorsement! Exclamation point. Romney responded, thank you, Mr. President, for the support. I hope that over the course of the campaign, I also earn the support and endorsement of the people of Utah. Okay. McKay Coppins, let's start with you on this question of Donald Trump. Romney has called Trump a phony and a fraud. Trump has called him, has said that Romney has choked like a dog. I mean, they've gone back and forth saying some pretty acrimonious things. How do you describe this odd relationship now?
Yeah, I don't think it's great. I don't think that the two men are, you know, going to be sending each other Christmas cards, or maybe their staffs will. Who knows? But I don't think that they're best friends. I think that what's happened is since those months in 2016, when they were, you know, completely in combat with one another, some things have obviously changed. For example, Donald Trump has been elected president. He's the leader of the Republican Party. Mitt Romney is now running for Senate. He hopes to be an outsized voice in the Republican Party coming to Washington. What I'm told is that Mitt Romney's basic assessment of Trump has not changed that much. Yeah. He still is very worried about the president's character. He's very worried about the way he talks about racial issues, about women, the way he's conducted his private life, his personal life. And what I'm told is that we'll continue to hear from Mitt Romney on those things. You know, it's not the case that Romney stopped waging these criticisms once Trump was elected. In fact, after Charlottesville, for example, we saw Mitt Romney speak out on this. When Roy Moore was running for Senate at Alabama and was endorsed by Donald Trump, we saw Mitt Romney say that it would degrade the Senate for him to be elected. So, you know, we continue to see Mitt Romney criticize Trump on those issues of kind of integrity and values. And I think we're going to keep seeing that. That's what I'm told, at least by people close to Romney. What I'm also told, though, is that Romney doesn't want to define himself either in this campaign or as senator by his relationship with Donald Trump. He doesn't want to be the anti-Trump senator. He doesn't want to be the pro-Trump senator. He wants to be putting forth his own vision, working to get his own agenda items done, and representing the people of Utah. And you know, we've seen examples of some Republicans just come out fully in the never Trump mold. You know, most recently and probably most notably, Jeff Flake, the senator from Arizona, has given multiple floor speeches on the Senate floor condemning elements of the president's rhetoric, of his agenda, of his moral character. And while that's cathartic for a lot of conservatives, and I do think that it says something, I think that that's courageous in some ways. It's also the case that Jeff Flake is not running for re-election. Yeah. And he has clearly forfeited any chance he has of truly influencing this White House. Mitt Romney, I think, sees some areas where they can work transactionally together, he and the president. And so he's not going to look for opportunities to pick fights with the president where fights don't need to be picked. So, for example, those tweets, it's possible that Mitt Romney could have just ignored the president's endorsement. Yeah. Yeah. I also don't think it's the biggest scandal in the world that he said, "Thank you for your support, Mr. President."
Well, then he pivoted to the people of Utah, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah. He pivoted immediately. It was a way to acknowledge that the president had said this. He's not, you know, he's fundamentally not going to be picking fights over something so petty and small like that. But I also think that, if you're scandalized by that, you probably didn't notice that he considered joining the administration a year ago, right? Yeah. So I think that Mitt Romney is going to continue to find ways to work with the president, and people who are hoping for him to join the resistance are going to be disappointed. That said, I don't think it means that his message in this campaign and his platform as a senator are counterproductive. I think that you could still see a possibility of him moving the Republican Party or providing a counterbalance to Trumpism in the GOP.
What do you think? This is what I have to say. I'm confused because on one hand, it seems like one of the central things that's bothering Mitt Romney is Donald Trump and the Trump brand of populism.
Right. And I think the interesting part about this whole thing is Mitt Romney and Donald Trump's relationship has always been awkward. From the first time Donald Trump endorsed Mitt Romney in 2012.
I think awkward is a good word if you look at that picture of them having dinner together.
Yes. I mean, it's awkward and it's at times confrontational. And the idea, and as McKay said, that I don't think Mitt Romney wants to just be seen as a foil to the president. But there is a reality here. He has stated problems with the president, including some policy problems. Everyone who is a senator is asked probably daily about something about the president. And Mitt Romney is going to be hounded by reporters like McKay Coppins in Washington, D.C. constantly about what he thinks about the latest Donald Trump tweet, what he thinks about the latest policy, what he thinks about the latest scandal in the White House. He knows that. He's a smart man. He sees how Washington works. So part of Mitt Romney has decided that he wants that. He wants the ability to speak out in that vein. And I think that part makes it weird. Now, I will point out, too, there is a political reality of running for office. Mitt Romney is running in the state of Utah, one of the most conservative states in the nation, a state that doesn't particularly love Donald Trump, but hasn't rejected him outright either. He has a 50% approval rating in this state. 80-something percent of Republicans like him. Mitt Romney is trying to run as a Republican. To go out and bash the president, especially at something cheap like this, that's not the politically smartest move when you're trying to convince a certain conservative vein of Utah Republicans that you
especially
should be taken seriously.
Especially those who show up at the conventions, right?
Right, that you should be taken seriously.
Yeah, yeah. Let me I was wondering what you think about before Steve Bannon became persona non grata in the Trump administration. He had, of course, intentions of enlisting candidates to run against, you know, conventional types. And I expect he had designs for Utah. And I'm wondering he mentioned as much. I wonder, with Bannon out of the picture, how that changed the dynamic. Do either of you know?
Well, I think
Go ahead, Matt.
I would say the hard part here is that Mitt Romney is such a singular figure in Utah politics. The idea that you were going to get a legitimate conservative challenger against him was always an outside chance, to put it nicely. So there was no one who ever has stepped forward. In recent days, the Utah auditor, John Dougal, has expressed interest, but has not, to my knowledge, created a campaign organization. He needs to run statewide. Usually these things, you have a year ramp-up period. So if he did, he would do it on a shoestring against one of the most popular figures in the state. And even that, he would acknowledge, is a long shot. So I don't know if that was ever realistic.
Yeah.
Now, there is a vein of the Republican Party in the state that does not look at Mitt Romney as the saving grace, as the obvious choice that no one else should be considered. So there is some slight opening, but realistically, when you get to a primary election, it seems far-fetched to think that Republicans wouldn't pick Mitt Romney.
Yeah. McKay?
Well, yeah, it's interesting. I did some reporting on this last year when Bannon was eyeing Utah. And, you know, he had met with Boyd Matheson, mm-hmm. who is then the head of the Sutherland Institute, a conservative think tank in Utah. And Boyd Matheson just straight up decided not to run and ended up, saying nice things about Mitt Romney. I don't think that Bannon ever had a real shot at having the kind of influence in Utah that he has had in Alabama and might have had in other states if he hadn't been excommunicated by the president. Part of that goes to this tension that we've been talking about, which is that Bannon championed this brand of populist nationalism that was at the foreground of Trump's campaign, Trump's rise, and is the direction that a lot of Trumpian figures in the Republican Party want to drag the conservative movement. Mm-hmm. And that style of politics just has not caught fire in Utah the way that it has in other red states. And part of it gets to just, structural issues. Utah is a state that is, very pro-free trade, benefits from free trade, does not want to see a lot of protectionist policies making that more difficult for the Utah economy to thrive. It's also a state with a robust civil society, owing largely to the predominant Mormon faith in the state, but also just in general, it's a very communitarian state in ways that other red states aren't. And all of this kind of makes it more difficult for Trump-style nationalism to thrive. So I don't know if Bannon's fall from grace, from Trumpian grace, really had that much influence one way or the other, especially because, as Matt said, Romney is just so popular in the state. Yeah. It would have been hard to see a challenger take him down.
That's McKay Coppins. He's a staff writer at The Atlantic. His most recent article about Mitt Romney's Senate bid is there's a link to it on our website, radiowest.org. McKay is joining us from the offices of The Atlantic in Washington, D.C. And Matt Canham is here with us in the studio, senior managing editor of the Salt Lake Tribune, former political reporter for the paper. Back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking about Mitt Romney's new role as a Utah political candidate. He has made it official now on Friday. He announced he is running for Orrin Hatch's seat. So today in the program, we're talking about all the questions that come with a Romney candidacy. We have Matt Canham with us of the Salt Lake Tribune, and we have McKay Coppins of The Atlantic. 801-585-WEST is the number. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. So we were getting a couple of questions on a pretty obvious point. This from Phil, who writes, I find it odd that someone who hasn't lived in the state for all that long can garnish support from the population. Is Mitt Romney a carpetbagger? Jess asks a similar kind of question. Why is Utah the place for him to run? Why not Massachusetts? Matt Canham, is he a carpetbagger? I mean, I'm thinking back to, well, I wasn't around in this time, but Orrin Hatch,
right.
When, of course, he, born and raised in Pittsburgh, did come to Utah for school, but then went back to Pennsylvania. Didn't move here really until 1969. He was 35. And I think the carpetbagger thing comes up from time to time. Where does Mitt Romney fit in that?
So Mitt Romney has lived in the state of Utah, at least his permanent residence, from 2014. And yes, he owns other homes in other states and visits them frequently. But he's been a resident of Holiday, Utah since 2014. He previously was here for a few years during the Olympics. He got here in 1999, was here through the Olympics. He went to college at Brigham Young University and then got here in 1969, I believe. So he has made stops in Utah, but obviously the bulk of his life was spent in Massachusetts, at least his adult life. And so he acknowledges that it's a legitimate question. You know, that's something that one of the few things that other Republicans and the Democrat Jenny Wilson can hit him on is that he doesn't have long-time connections to the state. But, you know, do
but
actual—
he's a, but he's seen as a favorite son because he's Mormon.
He's Mormon. He's connected with a lot of leaders here.
Yeah.
And how many years do you need to live in a state to be considered a resident of that state? There is obviously no, you know— He clearly fits under the legal requirements to run for office, but he will face that question over and over again.
McKay, what do you think?
Well, I put this question to one of Romney's advisors when I was writing this story last week. And, you know, he made the case that, look, yes, Mitt Romney he grew up in Michigan, spent his life in Massachusetts, his adult life. But in an almost spiritual sense, Utah has been his home for a long time. Mm-hmm. You can date that back to the Salt Lake City Olympics, which I think Romney would point to as maybe the crowning achievement of his career.
Yeah. It's how he let off in his video with
right. It's also, frankly, what propelled him to the Massachusetts governorship.
Yeah.
You know, his handling of the Salt Lake City Olympics, which was widely revered across the political spectrum, across the country, really the world, made him seem like somebody who was competent and capable and prepared to be governor of a large, complicated state like Massachusetts. But the other thing that this advisor pointed out to me, which I think is more personal, was, you know, in the wake of Mitt Romney's 2012 defeat, he and Anne, his wife Anne, could have lived anywhere, and they chose Utah. I mean, they lived in La Jolla, California for a while where they had a house, but they built a house in Utah and basically decided that this is where they wanted to stay for the rest of their lives. They have family there. They feel comfortable there. They're among their people in many different senses, religious, political, spiritual. He's a superstar there in a lot of senses. And so, you know, they basically decided even long before he decided to run for Senate, Romney decided that he wanted to settle down in Utah and they wanted to live out their retirements there. So that's another another case for why he's not a true carpetbagger.
So my colleague Thomas Burr asked Mitt Romney about this after he announced his Senate run, about the carpetbagger claim. And what Romney said was, quote, "It's funny, but that everywhere I go, even when I was running for president, people assumed I was from Utah. And the only place that people didn't assume I was from Utah is some places when I'm in Utah." He said, "I'm a Utah person by heritage, by family roots, and of course, this is where I live now. I mean, we saw the country, and we decided to make this our home." So that's how he's answering the question.
It didn't hurt Orrin Hatch, didn't hurt Bobby Kennedy, didn't hurt Hillary Clinton.
No.
And back to the phones. Janita is with us in Orem. Janita, hi.
Yes, hi, thank you.
Sure.
So thank you for the show. Very, very fascinating, and I was following the tweet between them and wondering what was going on. But this thought came to me as I was listening, and I wonder if there's part of the motivation for Romney is this idea of giving this alternative to Mormons to hitch their wagon to, so to say, in that I'm rather disgusted as an LDS person how many Mormons support Trump and how contrary he is to our values and what we stand for, especially when we look at morals. And he's a bully, he's a narcissist, he brags about sexually assaulting women, and yet he has, you know, a high percentage of support from Mormons. And so the thought came to me that he might be doing this as well to save the Mormon soul, because we're going the wrong direction in this. So that thought came to me that he might just be thinking about, here are LDS people backing someone like Trump okay. and what he stands for. So that's my thought.
Okay, well, let's put that to these guys. McKay, you've written that Romney's faith may be playing a role in his political thinking in some ways, that he believes it's important to have a high-profile Latter-day Saint to play the role as ambassador for the faith. But what about Janita's spin on that as well?
It's interesting. I don't know if that's how he's thinking about it, though it's certainly possible. A couple things I would note, which is that first, Mormons were arguably the element of the Republican coalition that have done more to push back against Trump than any other. Trump's routinely performed very poorly in Mormon-dominated areas in the Republican primaries. Utah, of course, gave him, I think, 14% of the vote. Then, you know, obviously Trump won Utah, but with less than 50%. And they were the only religious group in America that significantly changed their voting patterns in 2016. There's an interesting statistic from the Cooperative Congressional Election Study that was in the Washington Post last week that showed that that Mormons had voted, I think, around 80% for Romney in 2012. And in 2008, I think, voted over 70% for John McCain. In 2016, according to this study, it was only 52% for Trump. So that's a pretty dramatic swing. Now you see approval ratings, I think, around 60% for Trump. My guess is that a lot of them would say that they support the congressional or the GOP tax bill and the nomination of a conservative judge to the Supreme Court, but they don't like Trump himself personally, or at least most of them would say that. But yeah, I think that Mitt Romney certainly is motivated to help the LDS church. And that's a role that I think Utah senators and Utah congressmen play regardless. But I'm not sure that he thinks that he's saving Mormonism's soul necessarily. More, I think he wants to save the Republican Party in general, or at least offer them an alternative path by showing them the Utah model of Republicanism, which is largely inflected by Mormonism.
You know, it's interesting the comparison between Orrin Hatch and Mitt Romney on this point. Orrin Hatch has been one of Donald Trump's best friends in the Senate. They have they appear to like each other. Orrin Hatch has defended Donald Trump's statements, even when other members of his party have been offended by them. And that part is interesting because Orrin Hatch and Mitt Romney are also close. Orrin Hatch wanted Mitt Romney to run. But there is that difference. Orrin Hatch, you know, that's where, like, the Utah model, Orrin Hatch essentially has been the Utah model for decades in Washington. And he has really supported the president. And I think, you know, what we're seeing is there's a conflict, you know, there's people conflicted about this president, Mormon conservatives. You know, as McKay said, about 60% of Mormons now approve of the president. That's higher than any other religious group. So even though the support for a Republican is far lower than we've seen in the past, Mormons still support this president more than any other faith group.
Which says what, do you think? That while they may have been reluctant before, they're getting on board now?
Well, it's lower than before, but there's a lot of connection with conservatism, a lot of connection with Republicans, and Mormons still feel a connection there, and they want to support their leader.
I would also add, though, that interest, the stat about Mormons supporting Trump more than any other religious group, I think is a little misleading. It comes from this poll that was released, I think, by Pew at the end of the year or the beginning of this year. That grouped all Protestant Christians together.
Yeah, they didn't
as
include
one group.
Evangelicals, I don't think.
So right. Yeah. If you compared evangelicals to Mormons, or specifically white evangelicals, to white Mormons, for example, to give an apples-to-apples comparison, there's a pretty dramatic difference. But it is true what Matt said. I think that there's a, you know, Jim Dalrymple is a reporter at BuzzFeed and was a former reporter at the Salt Lake Tribune, Matt's paper, was tweeting about this over the weekend and said that there is a strain of pragmatism in Mormon Republicanism, Mormon conservatism, which kind of steers them toward trying to support and get things done with whoever, whatever Republican or conservative is in power, right? And this is one of the reasons that I think people expecting really dramatic collisions or confrontations between Romney and the president are probably going to be disappointed. I think we'll see some elements of that, maybe some moments of that. But overall, we're not going to see Mitt Romney as a pillar of the resistance, you know, picking fights with the president all the time. And frankly, I don't think we're going to see Mormons doing that either.
Will he mention Trump much? I mean, there was a, I think it was Hugh McKay who quoted, I think it was Derek Miller, who said, I don't think you'll hear the word Trump 10 times in the campaign.
I think that that would be Romney's preference. As I think I said this before, but I wrote in the piece, Romney doesn't want to make this campaign about Trump. He doesn't want to make him his entire, you know, political profile. He doesn't want to let that be defined by Donald Trump's existence and his Twitter feuds and everything that Trump does every day. But as Matt said, he does want to put himself in a position to speak out when he feels compelled to, right? And while Romney has continued to do that over the last couple of years, coming from a United States senator, it's going to hold a bit more weight. It's going to mean a little bit more. And so I don't think we'll see Romney talking about Trump all the time. I do think we'll see him call him out at moments, and I think we'll also see him look for opportunities to express agreement when they do agree on things.
Janita, thanks for the call. McKay Coppins is a staff writer at The Atlantic. He's joining us from Washington, D.C. We have Matt Canham, senior managing editor for the Salt Lake Tribune, with us here in the studio. We'll take another break and come back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking about Mitt Romney's new role as a Utah political candidate. Of course, he's made the announcement official on Friday. He's running for Orrin Hatch's Senate seat in the fall. So we're talking about it today with Matt Canham of the Salt Lake Tribune and McKay Coppins of The Atlantic. I want to get back to this question. What does Mitt Romney stand for? What kind of Republican is he? Is he moderate? Is he right-wing conservative? Which gets to something that you've both written about and talked about. McKay, you said that Romney is going to want to make the case that Utah's distinctive brand of conservatism could offer a better way forward for the Republican Party in the country. And I want to work through that a little bit. And there are these three things in particular, three issues that he mentioned in the video: balanced budget, export-based economy, which reads free trade, openness to immigration. And as I mentioned in the introduction, three things that really kind of run counter to a prevailing trend going on right now, at least in the Trump-led Republican Party. So talk a little bit about that, if you would. McKay, start.
Well, I think the most interesting one is immigration. I think they're all interesting. But let's talk about immigration. I mean, Utah is a state that is populated by a lot of former Mormon missionaries who served abroad. A lot of them served in Latin America. A lot of them have more nuanced views of immigration from Latin America than people in that haven't had that experience. It's a state that where the predominant faith, the LDS Church, has spoken out repeatedly in favor of a more compassionate approach to immigration policy. And it's also a state where you know, policymakers and faith leaders and activists have come together and produced this kind of consensus document that outlines values for how to approach immigration. I think it's called the Utah Compact.
Yeah.
You know, it basically lays out this case that immigration policy should be conducted in ways that are geared toward family reunification, that are generally compassionate toward people who, especially who were brought here when they were young, whether they're documented or undocumented, and generally just says that it should be, you know, done with the, in the spirit of love and compassion that I think Mormons and a lot of other religious groups teach. So that is not that kind of whole idea, that essence is not found in the way that Donald Trump talks about immigration.
No, I mean it's a third rail for Donald Trump right now. He cannot express that, or he will absolutely, and as we've seen, when he started to seem to equivocate on the DACA question and a path to, you know, he was really taken to task by the right. So that seems like something that he cannot upset his base over.
Of course he can. I mean, look at how Donald Trump launched his campaign. The very first speech he gave as a candidate was talking about, you know, accusing Mexico of exporting criminals and rapists to the United States. That issue, arguably more than any other, was the issue that propelled him to win the Republican nomination, Donald Trump. He cannot back away from his very hardline stance on that issue without risking serious political repercussions. So far, his base has held. If there's one thing that he could do to alienate his base, it would probably be backing off his immigration promises. And then you see just a totally different thing happening in Utah. That's not to say there are, of course, conservative immigration hardliners in Utah. There's a debate that's still going on in Utah like there's going on in the rest of the country. Sure. But in general, it doesn't. This kind of visceral nationalism, nativism, doesn't hold the same sway in Utah that it does in other conservative states.
We asked Mitt Romney about immigration in particular, and he said he was – this is probably a part where I'm more conservative than most. He supports an expanded border wall. He supports what the president's trying to do with chain migration, which is the family reunification thing that McKay just talked about. Mitt Romney said he supports getting rid of the lottery program. Essentially, he said he's pretty much in line with Donald Trump.
So what does he say in the video when he talks about how we have a different approach to Washington over immigration in Utah?
I think it's about how you talk. You know, when Donald Trump in an Oval Office conversation used a swear word to describe African countries, Haiti, El Salvador, Mitt Romney responded fast, immediately, and criticized what the president said. It's the way you communicate, I think, for Mitt Romney, because in our interview with him, policy-wise, he said he's in line with the president.
Here's a question. This is from Tim, who writes, would Romney be comfortable being one of 100 senators when he's always been an executive, a manager, an administrator, the boss? If elected in 2018, then in 2019 at 71, he would have no seniority, no committee, no subcommittee chairmanship. He would be one vote out of 100. His power as a senator would appear to be his vote in committee and then on the Senate floor. And this is something, McKay Coppins, you've written about recently. You mentioned that Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has said that if Romney comes to Washington, he would have this level of national identity and respect. They're even thinking about him for this chair of this National Republican Senatorial Committee. So talk about that, if you would.
Yeah, I think that the Republican Party in Washington is eager for Mitt Romney to get here, in part because he's just somebody who has relationships with a lot of Republicans in Washington and across the country. And, you know, at a time when the Republican Party is oddly fractured and having a hard time pushing through major legislative initiatives. The one, exception was the tax bill. But aside from that, it's been really difficult for Republicans to get on the same page. I think a lot of people see Mitt Romney as somebody who could help, you know, get a lot of different Republicans from different factions together. The NRSC chairmanship is an interesting idea because it would basically mean that his primary job is to work with fundraisers and donors and raise money for the party and to help elect Republicans to the Senate. that obviously Mitt Romney was a there's one thing his campaign did right in 2012. It was raising money. And frankly, a lot of the donors in the Republican Party now are feeling skittish about the direction that Trump is taking the party. And so the party leaders here in Washington are eager to have Mitt Romney kind of interfacing with them and reassuring them. But then there's also just this idea that I think the question of whether he's going to be happy in the Senate is a live one. And I'm not sure that he will be. Mitt Romney, I think, enjoyed being a governor. He enjoyed running the Olympics. He certainly enjoyed running his businesses. Even if he is elevated to kind of a higher status in the party, I'm just not sure that he's going to adapt well to this idea that, it's very hard to get things done in Congress. It's by design difficult to get things done. He's going to spend a lot of time in committee meetings. He's going to spend a lot of time, trying to build consensus and talk to other senators and pass legislation. And a lot of that legislation isn't going to pass. And you see this a lot with people who enter the Senate after long careers in business or as state executives. They become frustrated very quickly. And so it's an open question whether Mitt Romney is going to really enjoy the sausage making that is the legislative process in Washington.
Here's a question from Michael, who writes, why is Romney planning to go through both the caucus convention system and the signature gathering routes to get on ballot in November? This is something he mentioned at his, his speech on Friday right. night. He mentioned that he was going to do both. He was going to both try to get signatures and try to go through the delegate process. Were you surprised by that he's going to do the convention process?
Then I thought about it. You do the signature route to guarantee that you get on the primary ballot. You do the convention route to appease
the right.
And he knows that's one of his weak spots, or at least potential weak spots.
But you also potentially get embarrassed.
Right. And that's the gamble. And that's why I was a little surprised. It is very clear that Mitt Romney knows that he has a couple things that he needs to work on, and he is just going to put himself out there. He's going to visit every county. He's driving around in his black pickup truck, shaking hands and collecting signatures. He's going to try to work this thing and convince people that he is actually going to be a senator who represents Utah and not just use Utah to get a national platform. And he's opening himself up to going to the convention where he might get embarrassed. We've seen that. Governor Gary Herbert is a very popular governor. He did not come in first at the convention last time.
Yeah.
And he easily won the primary. John Curtis is the new member of Congress from the state of Utah. He did not win in convention. And he is now in Washington. So maybe because we have a little bit of a track record, maybe the Romney campaign thought even if it's a loss at convention, people are fine. The one thing that's interesting about Utah's political system is anyone who decides to sign up to run as a Republican gets to have a speech at convention. And this convention will be interesting because there are a few Republicans who have not run for office before, who are not well known, who are going to be sharing that stage with Mitt Romney.
We should also point out Utah Republican Chairman Rob Anderson, who gave an interview to the Tribune where
right.
he said that he believed that Mitt Romney was keeping out candidates that would be a better fit in Utah. And he not only backed away from that, he ran from that shortly thereafter. Matt, you want to say something about that?
I just thought, this is Rob Anderson is the chairman of the Republican Party. Your job is to get Republicans elected. Your job is not to criticize Republicans running for office. And he said that Mitt Romney's keeping better candidates out. He said that Mitt Romney doesn't live here. His kids weren't born here. He doesn't shop here. He compared Mitt Romney to Hillary Clinton running for Senate in New York. And then Mitt Romney called Rob Anderson. Rob Anderson apologized to Governor Romney and then immediately sent out a clarifying statement saying that he apologized that our story did not capture the tone in which these comments were made. He didn't say that he didn't say it, but the tone was missing. Rob Anderson got a lot of pushback quickly, but it does show how some people feel that Mitt Romney's kind of coming into their territory.
Yeah. All right. Let me I just want to mention Jenny Wilson, a member of the Salt Lake County Council, daughter of former Salt Lake City Mayor Ted Wilson, is the sort of presumptive, I guess, Democratic challenger for Orrin Hatch's soon-to-be vacant seat. She's got a long – this is a very steep hill to climb.
Yes. I think, you know, her best chance was Orrin Hatch running again after saying he wasn't going to in his last campaign and then making a go of it. We did a pretty speculative poll in January with the Hinckley Institute comparing Mitt Romney and Jenny Wilson. And at that time, Mitt Romney had a 45 percentage point lead. And some people in Republican politics wondered why that was so low. Running a statewide election as a Democrat in Utah is just incredibly difficult. And this is even more difficult than the average.
McKay Coppins, let me put one final question to you. Is a run for Mitt Romney in 2020 just silly as a piece of speculation?
I mean, it's not – look, never say never, right? I didn't think Donald Trump was ever going to run. And yeah. I certainly didn't think he was going to become president. I don't think that that's where Mitt Romney's head is at right now. And the more that he spends time in the Senate working with the president, working with the White House to try to get, you know, major Republican policy done, the less of a coherent message he'll have in primarying Donald Trump. So I don't think that that's likely. I've ruled out any serious predictions in this political
That's
climate.
Probably smart. It's McKay Coppins of The Atlantic. You can find a copy to his latest reporting about Mitt Romney on our website, radiowest.org. McKay, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And Matt Canham, Senior Managing Editor for the Salt Lake Tribune. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Radio West is a production of KUER News, the program directed by Tim Slover, produced by Benjamin Bombard and Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.